Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week I speak to farmer industry leaders, company owners who have all given up their time to share their stories of personal or professional growth. This week I have the pleasure of being joined by Chiara Invernizzi, I believe. Chiara is a farmer executive based out of Italy. I've not had too many Europeans on the show previously, but Chiara, it is nice to get a morning shoot in, I have to say, where the light is a little bit better for me here in London. But look, welcome to the show. In terms of, I guess, your brief background and your main current focus, what would you, or could you just let us know what that is, and then we'll jump into, I guess, your career journey?
Yes, absolutely. I'm currently really dealing with some projects in startup phase of clinical trials and doing a bit of, operational side. So managing from A to Z, from the award to the execution of contracts and site activation, and a bit of strategy and process improvement where, we challenge the way things has always been done, and we try to make it better. The world outside evolves, and so do we. So here I am. And
Fair
I'm pretty
enough.
proud of it. I mean, changing things is really the way to move forward.
It is. It must be a tough job at times because I guess getting people to change is often a nightmare. They need to want to change. So, Chiara, I've recently seen you active on LinkedIn promoting the work that you do in terms of contracts, budgets, change management, etc. But I'm always interested to find out how people got into this life science, this clinical research space. So, perhaps to take you back. Don't know whether you think about it too much these days, but how did you first get into the world of life sciences and clinical research?
Yeah, interesting question. You're kind of bringing me back to my origins and when I started, like quite a few years by now, back in time. And honestly, when I was at university, I never thought about doing clinical trials. It's not something that it's promoted or advertised or, very much spoken about, at least in my times. And I started being a researcher, and I was a researcher. I was working on anti-cancer oncology, new type of molecules for solid tumors. And I was doing that in a small biotech based in Milan. It was a nice job. I learned a lot. I'm so grateful I had that experience, but it was not my cup of tea. I felt like I was playing with things. It was not concrete enough for me. I think that if you are a pure researcher, then you are born with that. And it was not me. So I tried pretty much after 1 year or two, I tried to step away, and I was lucky. And life is always about being lucky at times, being in the right place at the right time. So I started doing, I'm curious by nature. So I started speaking with my colleagues within business development. I started talking about communication. I started talking to the clinical team and try and started doing, it was a small company, so everybody was a bit of a, doing a bit of everything. So I started doing more business development contracts. I started doing communication things, looking at the site activations plans. And I found that I really liked the clinical trial space, especially at that time I really enjoyed doing the contracts and because of the negotiation aspect. So doing really getting to a win-win situation where the site is happy and the client or the sponsor, the pharma, the biotech is happy. That was a big source of satisfaction for me. So from there, then I was offered a position within the CRO space to continue with my startup activities. And yeah, I started there. I enjoyed it. I was doing local things. And then again, by chance, I had the opportunity to move to the UK and join PPD. And I said, well, this is my chance. I mean, it's really not something unplanned. I never planned to kind of out of a sudden move abroad. But ultimately, I'll do and redo again, apart from the weather, I'll do that work experience over and over.
What are you saying about our weather, Chiara? I don't know what you're talking about
Come on. Come on,
here.
I'm in Italy. Not today. Today is very overcast, but generally we have much more kind of blue skies,
Fair play. Yeah, you've got me
you
on, or you've got me on that one. So what, I mean, what I guess tempted you to make that move? Because I guess for anyone, that is actually a consideration, is moving to the UK. It's a nice place, but the weather isn't often as good as a lot of mainland Europe. So what was it that made you say, you know what, this opportunity is good enough, it's big enough, it's I'm curious enough about it to actually up and move country?
Well, two things. It was the period of my life as well, from a personal side, where I wanted to change things. So I really, really needed something to step away from the reality, where the reality was living in a city like Milan. And the opportunity was, well, the UK for people of my age, the UK or Australia, the US are a dreamer. A dream place to go because they speak English, you can improve your language, you can learn from different cultures, and there were still the pound was strong compared to euros. So it was as well on an economical side, it was really attractive as an opportunity, but as well the opportunity and the job itself. So I was able to step from being local to Italian reality to look at Europe at least, or global than it became. So it was an opportunity to really broaden my knowledge, work with more internationally, know more culture, know more people, and even a challenge for myself. And you always live in a place, you have your certainty, your house, and in 1 month, I left everything. I packed all my stuff and moved to the UK. I didn't have a house, so I stayed in a college with a friend of mine in Cambridge, and I took a week to find a place, a small studio where I could live, and it was like literally one room, so where I could live, and it really forged my temperament. Like I was able to do it on my own, and I was like 26 at the time. So it was a good challenge.
Fair play. I mean, that's a big move, really, at 26. And to not actually have something set up in terms of permanent accommodation until you got here must have been a bit scary, to say the least. I don't know. I mean, so what, where did, I guess, that passion, you must have had a lot of passion for the work that you were doing, otherwise you just don't make that jump. So what was it about the opportunity with PPD and that global, or at least European element, that to an extent sucked you in? And what was the difference when you got there? How did you find that difference between working on local stuff to the bigger, broader trials that you then started to work on?
I mean, when I moved, I didn't really know it was such a big opportunity. I was really attracted by the package as a whole. And when I got there, it was right away the environment. The Cambridge office is really, or was at least, very multicultural. And I love that because it can really broaden your mind and your views and, really enriching as an experience. And the first thing I remember was really in the Italian office, we tended to be generally very corporate wise, very formal. Okay. In the UK, what I found, and it was surprising to me, was the re not relaxed environment, but more human side. For some reason, I don't know whether it is a specific of that PPD office or I
Or
can
maybe we're a
extend.
nice bunch, us Brits, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well,
But what, so what was the difference then? So you're saying that in Italy it was quite corporate and just more relaxed with the Cambridge office. What, in what way? Just
what way? It was like everybody, like small things that may make a difference, like really more chat before getting into the work. And then when you start working, you work hard. And then, you have like little things doing even outside stuff. So we were playing football, we were going out to cinemas together. So it was more kind of friendly. I don't know whether because many people were from not necessarily abroad, but relocated to Cambridge. So there was a need to feel closer one to each other so that we had this, type of
Did
family.
you have, were you lucky enough to get almost a small expat type community at the
Exactly.
PPD site, really?
Could be. I mean, that was the case at the time, and it was really nice. I'm still talking to quite a few people from that
Oh, yeah.
time.
Wow.
So I do. I mean, people visited me back in Milan, and I visited them in where they are. I regularly go back to Cambridge, and you kind of create that bond that really lasts. I don't know
Yeah.
whether it is a personal aspect as well. You need to put the efforts in keeping the bond as well. But it was really a nice thing. I mean, one person went to US and I visited her there. So you see, after
Yeah.
years, and it's 14 years today, so you can keep the human relationship. And as well, there was a lot of understanding. Like, it was like when you work with many countries, you need to be incredibly kind. From a perspective, well, you need to be kind anytime. But when you kind of start facing people using English in a different way, having a different culture and approach, then you need to do the effort that then becomes very natural to be in their shoes. So they use English in a different way. I use English in my way. I'm not native. You need to really understand what they're talking about, what their concern, their problems, and you create that thing that helps building the team overall, even if you're then remotely located. And I think that I really love working in international environments because of that, because of the exposure to cultures, so exposure to different traditions, way of thinking, and it's such an valuable thing.
So at the time you were, I guess, a contracts manager as well, which I'm assuming it involves negotiation. So understanding those nuances between a native English speaker and, European English speaker must have been quite useful. But what would you, if you could kind of pinpoint what makes perhaps a good contract manager at that sort of time, what would you say is needed, I guess, for if anyone tuning in who wants to get into contract negotiation and that side of things, how did you make that change, and what do you think is needed to be successful in a role like that?
Yeah, interesting question. I think overall it's a good listener. So the any negotiation, whether you negotiate on a contract, whether you negotiate with people on different aspects, even when you are a line manager, then at times you negotiate with your direct reports. But really understanding the other party is fundamental to have a successful outcome. Not necessarily, but if you don't listen, certainly you don't get the best outcome. And negotiating is really about not focusing on bringing home exactly what you need or what you want, but finding even the compromise position, the key points that you don't want to give up on, and the things that you say, okay, let's find where we can meet in between. And it's the negotiation, it's all about that. It's all about finding the best outcome and have a win-win situation where all the parties involved
So
are
educate
happy.
me on this, because I've not dealt too much with the contracts management side of things when recruiting myself. Normally I'm pure clin ops, as it may be. But so who are you negotiating with? Who's the contract management between? Is it the sites and the sponsors? Is it other vendors, or is it a mix of all of those things?
Companies generally have separate teams for vendor contracts, sponsor contracts only, so the master agreements between CRO and the sponsor, and the site contracts. I can talk about the site contracts. So when the CRO is delegated by the client, by the sponsor, the pharmaceutical companies to negotiate a contract with the sites or with the investigators to do the clinical trials. So this is the part of it. And I think that the main challenge of it is really understanding the scenarios, understanding the nuances of the countries. Because if you negotiate with Spain, it's very much different than how you negotiate with Germany. It's very much
Interesting.
different than how you negotiate with China. So being knowledgeable about that aspect is really a fundamental part.
I'm interested about that, because I guess that I've done recruitment all over the world, different countries, and found that it's, again, once you get beyond the culture and beyond the people, people tend to want the same things, but how you get there is slightly different. So I'd be interested to hear what I guess your experiences have been in terms of how negotiating in Spain differs to that in Germany, to that in China, if you could share a bit of inside wisdom without giving away all of your secrets, of course. But yeah, how does it differ for yourself?
Yeah, they well, you mentioned the culture. Certainly, I mean, there are stereotypes about Spanish people being more approachable, very cheerful and stuff, and German
Yeah.
people be a bit more sticking to certain patterns. It's a generalization. I don't want to be, pointed for that.
No, of
But
course. Like there is the generalizations. I guess I think we're aware of those. You know, you think German, you think efficiency, etc. So it's, I guess, you know.
it's that. But also, like, if you think about Germany, Germany negotiate, especially the big institution, they negotiate heavily the legal language. They
Right.
negotiate the budget as well, but not that much. If you look at Spain, you have a contract template per site that is basically non-negotiable or very minimally negotiable. So all the legal negotiation is relatively easier than what it is about the budget, has to be in a special site format, which difference is different from what you receive from the client. So you need to as well to translate that back to the client, and the complexity is more about the budget.
I see, yeah.
And if we can talk about France and UK being a similar position where the contract template is standard and then the budget is in the national specific format, and many clients, especially when they're small and located in outside Europe, they struggle to understand or
Yeah.
read. So there is this bit that you need to know so that you're able to, the CRO is in between. So the contract manager at the CRO is in between the sponsor and the site.
Yeah.
And the beauty of that is making sure that the sponsor is happy because you're paid by the sponsor, but at the same time, the site with whom you need to work, not just for this client, but for multiple, is really happy with you as a CRO.
Yeah, I kind of I'm getting the same sense that it's there's a lot of similarities between what I do as a recruiter because I'm paid by the employers, but anyone that I'm working with as a job seeker also needs to be happy, and it's kind of like you're forever the middleman just trying to balance things. You're like, please look, I'm literally just trying to piece this together so that you're happy and you know everyone's happy. So it is quite exciting. I will also say that the best part about the job is the people. The worst part about the job is the people.
Yeah, same.
You know, you can get it right and you can get it wrong, and it's just that one big balancing act. So
Yeah. It's balancing out, but at the same time, once you understand, I mean, especially when you work remotely, you need to kind of refine and fine-tune your ability to understand the person from a voice. Many times you don't have the camera on, so you need to really understand even the non-verbal things via your earphones.
Yeah.
So you need to be really careful on. It's an exercise. You practice and you learn more, but really understanding how to approach a person. I mean, I may have the same message to give to you or to a completely different person. I would need to tailor the way I write my message. There are key things that needs to be always there for me, like the context, what the problem, and the proposed solution. So I'm always in favor. We, as a CRO, you're never an advisor of the client, of the sponsor, of the pharmaceutical company. But because you may know more about the entire situation than the sponsor, you need to be able to provide and support, partner with them to find the right solution. And I think that this worked quite well. As opposed to say, yeah, this is the problem. What do I do? And the client's like, yeah, but you're paid to help me out. So if you kind of cut this back and forth and you propose the solutions all the time,
Yeah.
it's really making the difference. And it's not just specific of psychiatrists, I would say.
No, that's all very fair. And clearly you must have been doing fairly well at it, because I noted from your LinkedIn profile that, you know, you started as contract manager, you were then regional manager, then director, and so on. So nobody likes perhaps talking about themselves or feeling like they're bragging, Chiara, but what would you say in general? I mean, I'd say that you've done it, so It's not you necessarily talking about yourself, but what would you say are the key attributes or personality traits of a good, individual like yourself who's managing the commercial contracts, managing these startup agreements?
Being curious. So, that's fundamental. I mean, I respect all the people that they're happy with, doing the same job for 30 years. It's not my personality. I'm not like that. I could be bored. Don't tell my husband before he thinks I've changed in him. But I need to change. I need to change from time to time. I need to challenge myself. I need to find new things where I can learn. And this is the key driver that brought me from being local, then looking at global, managing people, managing a department. So it's really never accepting things as they are as well. So curiosity to understand the context and the scenario, but as well, challenging, it's a pretty popular sentence right now, but saying challenge the status quo. The things that we have been doing in a certain way for 20 years doesn't necessarily mean that are still valid or good enough right now. So really trying to find ways to improve things, processes, structures, systems as well. Technology is really evolving fast right now. So really looking at how can we do better? How can we be more efficient? I joke a lot saying that I'm lazy because I try always to make things faster, like having efficiency, automation where we can, because this is the way that if I do things in smaller amount of time, I have more time to dedicate to other things or to learn new things. So I think this is key to drive and be always open to opportunities. It can be internal in the companies. Certain companies allow that, like even horizontal moves or stuff. But even outside, we're not married to the company. Not sure it's fair, politically fair to say, but we need to, even think about ourselves and our career. We need to be happy when we work. We spend so many hours. So if in a position in an organization I'm not happy, then I need to change something internally, externally, change completely career path. But I need to do something.
No, and I like what you're saying there about, I guess, innovating, adapting. And it's one thing that my mum has always said to me is that give the laziest person the hardest job and they'll tell you the easiest way to do it. And it's so true. You always got to be looking for that angle, haven't you? But one question that's on the tip of my tongue there is like, as these times have changed and you've been implementing changes and things, how do you feel that you have changed? Or have you, or is it remained the same? But probably one to reflect on, maybe. Have you changed? How do you feel that you've changed over the years in terms of how you
Well,
manage these things?
this is a nice, tricky question. But yeah, I
Sorry to
think
hit you with it.
no, that's okay. So people change. People change. They evolve. They tend to mature. I'm not the person that I was in my 20s. I learn new things. Any experience is enriching. So it's part of something that you put inside and then in one way or another will be reflected outside in what you do. So I've certainly sure I'm more mature, more I learn to listen more. I mean, it's something that you develop, that you train, working and writing things in a super diplomatic way, in a super clear way, communication styles, it's something that you can work on. And I really work on that because, and again, this is the laziness part. If I write an email correctly, right, that is understood at the first time, I don't have to spend time reading the response, providing clarifications, and using time. So it's something that you really practice and that I learned. I learned as well, with all this exposure to international environment, how to build teams that are very diversified. This is something that it's another aspect that very often is overlooked when, especially in hiring, when people tend to hire people similar to them. And it has pros and cons, but I do see that as a bit of a limitation because a team of clone thinking in the same way, agreeing on everything all the time, is not a very productive team. So I've really expanded on that aspect where I'm more in search of people who are different from me, where I can learn the most.
Sure. No, I think that's very valid. And another thing on that point, I guess when I've spoken to clients again, not necessarily site agreements or contracts, but more so just working on the CRO side, so being that middle player, as you like. One thing that I often hear from my clients when they want me to go and find people, they want someone who's already pretty much done the role at a rival CRO, right? And they tell me that, James, we must have this experience from elsewhere because people otherwise, they don't know what they don't know. Now, I hear it so often, and I'd be interested to get, I guess, your thoughts on that, because, you know, as someone who's managed teams, has, you know, done the whole global side of things, for those that are maybe tuning in and thinking, I love the sound of, you know, what Kiara has done, I'd quite like to get into that contracts and the negotiation side of things. I think that I can do it, but maybe their only experience to date is with like government or academic institutions, and it's that next step to break into industry or certainly CRO side. If you could perhaps pinpoint some of the areas that people may not know in terms of the difference between working academia or government institution to CRO negotiation, would you be able to help us out with that? Because I think that's one area that people just don't want to accept that they don't know what they don't know. But what is it that they don't know? If you can bottle this, Kiara, there will be a lot of people that are like, oh, thank you so much for letting me know. What is it?
No. Before getting into the answer directly to the question, I want to comment on the fact that say, yeah, what hiring manager saying, I want the people with certain experience in that field. I may be a bit different. I mean, there may be situations based on the structure of the team and experience of the team where that type of profile is needed. I'm pretty much the opposite. I have always encouraged my managers to hire by potential. This is because you can learn how to do a job. You can learn how to do contracts for clinical trials. I learned myself in the first instance. But what you cannot change immediately or quickly is if a person is not fitting the team. If the person has not the right attitude that works with the team. So for me, this is the first kind of reassuring
Refreshing
thing.
to hear you say that. I mean, that's music to my ears as a recruiter, I guess. Look, I often come up a lot of friction in this area, to say the least. But
No,
I'll leave that there and I'll let you continue.
it's for me, it's basics. I prefer really to train someone. It's an investment. When you hire someone who is green to that area, it is an investment. So you want to make sure that that person has won the potential to learn that, and then provide the food, you know, the fuel as well to make the engine working. So you need to provide the training, work on the onboarding pretty, you know, have it structured, very comprehensive, and accept that there is a learning curve. Of course, you are expecting a learning curve of say 2 months. I'm just making out a number. And then if a person is much slower, then you realize that as a manager and you take actions to bring the person back on the right learning curve or expected learning curve. But what I would say that you need to learn is there is a lot of material available about site contracts. Read the structure overall, the key clauses, the key aspects are pretty standard across all countries or regions. So once you understand that the key aspects are indemnity, responsibilities, financial terms, you know, publications, and you know, other like IP, I can go on. There are certain nuances, like there is GDPR in Europe. That's a specific nuance. But again, it's something that is available. You know, the material is there, and you can read the regulation, you can read the structure, you can read the key points, and the companies normally have fallback positions and training tools, country considerations, call it whatever you want, but then it's up to the individual to be like a sponge and absorb all the information and the material available. And then you learn on the job. You know, there will always be a first time. a first time that the society is asking for that change, the first time that I have this problem. But then the thing that I always look at is the ability to solve problems. Can you have a problem. Okay, we have problems in our lives that we may have not come across. So what do? We just kind of stay there, or we try to resolve. How do we try to resolve? How do we deconstruct the issue and try to make it smaller? How are we looking at the possible solutions and pick up the best one? So for me, yes, a lot of material available, good onboarding, curiosity again, and learn by experience. So try to be really the sponge where you learn. If you ask me to work and do psych contracts in Congo, I've not done it yet, ever. So, but okay, let's use the logic, let's use the knowledge and put it together and do it. I may do mistakes. Yes, I may. And then how I resolve that, the issues or the problems or the errors I make, that is making the difference.
Yeah. So it seems like, I guess, not necessarily to pinpoint necessarily what the piece that people don't know, what they don't know, but just to perhaps accept then that there is going to be lots that they don't know, and not focus on that, but to focus on their problem-solving ability. And hopefully that they come across a fair and reasonable hiring manager like yourself, who sees the value in, I guess, yeah, hiring for potential, not just somebody who fits immediately into a box.
Yeah. I mean, at times you may need someone who fit in the box because you don't have the knowledge in the country or the knowledge in that field, and you need to fill a gap. It may happen, but in many cases where you have big groups, then I would recommend to hire by potential. What I would say to candidates wanting to look at positions in that, go prepare to interviews. So, if you have an interview, the first time I did an interview for psych contracts, I studied. I mean, I knew what I was going to talk about because I worked on those, but I wanted to be the best. I wanted to feel like I own it, that I know what I'm talking about, that I know the ins and outs. So go prepare, do your research. We have internet. We don't need to go to the encyclopedia on paper to find the information. So get all your stuff, learn about the company, learn about the culture of it and the direction before, if a company is site-centric, you say, no, I do care about only the sponsors, then there may be a problem. So learn about that. Be smart on the way you go to the interview.
100%, Kiara. I mean, you're talking to someone who deals with a lot of applicants, and sometimes I do just sit there and think, come on, why are you asking me? I'm a recruiter. I'm not the clinical research expert here. There's a thing called Google that you can probably work out half the questions that you ask me. And I do just sit there and think, come on, look, you've got a PhD, you've got this, you've got that, but you're asking me where you would find sites, detail. I'm like, come on.
At times I think it is an insecurity thing. People tend to be insecure and nervous about interviews. I am nervous when I'm just before an interview because I want to impress, because I don't know the questions I will be asked. So I get that, but then try to be lucid and go back to the core and get prepared. How did you get prepared to an exams at university? You try, you learn, you write, all these things. Just do it and then go with it.
Wise advice. And look, to almost make this feel like an interview, because I've loved the insights that you've given us, and it's just real life stuff that you've been through, you've done, moved countries, dealt with different cultures, etc. And this question really feels like we are in an interview now. But if you were to try and label one of your biggest successes that you've had whilst making these moves, taking on the teams, dealing with different cultures, have you ever thought about that? Has there been a particular study that you turned around or anything like that, that where, a nice little
So,
story that you could share, like a bit of a success story, really, is what I'm looking for. I love a feel-good story.
as we are talking more about, the human side of things, I will mention a success about and the story of my last position.
Yeah.
So I started at Chiltern when the site agreements team was made of 12 people, 12,
Right.
okay? Very small, not structured, not so many processes, nothing. And as we went through acquisitions, mergers, the team became of 120.
Wow.
So it required structure, it required organization, good thinking about the organization, but as well, it required a lot of team building. And I can say, because I heard and I talked to people I remained in the organization, that they are, you know, they really gelled well. It's a bit too much to say that we were all friends, you know, with some. I'm friends. If I'm going somewhere, I'll say, yo, do you want to see there? Let's see, let's meet up in Brussels. Let's meet up here and
Yeah.
there. I'm invited to a wedding where it is an ex-colleague, and
Nice.
you know, it's in Europe, in another country. So being closer, being a team, that is what I'm really proud. And how I build that, it's something I can think about, given structure, being communication, transparency, and all that, empowering team, you know, kind of really challenge as well. I'm really much in a way where I set the context, I give this the overall strategy and a few directions, but I really want the people who want to contribute actively on initiatives, tactics, and process improvements. I want them to do that. And it may be unpopular for certain line managers that I had because they were just, oh, they are billable, so they need only to focus on delivery. But to me, if a person, and I can prove with numbers, just then focus on something else that they like, someone based on their strengths as well, and there is a reflection on their productivity because they're much happier, much more efficient, and more productive. So what I'm really proud is really the journey of the growth of the team and how it built as a great team, very close one to the other, very collaborative, open-minded, multicultural because it was a global team, lastly. So it was really a big achievement.
I like that. I like that. Something that is a good achievement that doesn't just focus on the figures in CRO world. So yeah, impressive. Refreshing, shall I say. But look, Kiara, it's been amazing to hear kind of your journey, how life has changed day to day, how your just general personality has influenced what you've done and allowed you to make those changes. I mean, in terms of your plans moving forward, are you looking to stay in this world of site agreements, contracts? Are you looking to venture out into anything else in a broader scale, maybe business development or anything like that? Because it sounds like, as you openly said, like you like, it seems like you like the change, you like that challenge. So is there any plans to go somewhere new, or
Why
even
not?
immediately?
Yeah, why not? Certainly, for me, job needs to be full of challenges and new things to learn. So I think for now, I really want, there are a lot of companies who are looking at structuring better, looking at process improvement. I have also a personal interest in change management. I studied the ProSci methodology, and I
Right.
think it is fundamental whenever you try to make changes, whether small or big, that's a fundamental complementary piece to have. So I'm really looking at remaining in clinical trials and pharma industry because there is a why behind that, because I think that if we focus on that and on drug discovery, there is a progress for humanity. So this is my big driver. Plus, I really love what I do, which is working with the people, working on the processes, and driving delivery ultimately. So all three aspects are key for me. Whether it is still in startup, whether it moved to business development or strategy, or
I was
I
going to
don't even
say
know sometimes
strategy.
what
I
I
get that. I can picture you somewhere in strategy down the line for sure.
Don't know. I don't know what I mean. I still need to work 27 years. So my journey and my career is very long still. So who knows where I will be in a few years. For
Yeah.
now, I'm still enjoying all these aspects and we'll see. Let's see, I'm open to opportunities. So,
Yeah, well, look, we'll certainly keep in touch and see where you are, and perhaps get you back on to talk about your next
really.
venture, your next, role, if it is in strategy, if it is elsewhere. But look, before I close off the show, I always like to wrap things up with a quick fire questions round. So it sounds like, I mean, you certainly were one to take risks when you were younger, moving over to the UK, embracing this cold weather of ours. But if you were to give one piece of advice to your younger self looking back now, what would that be?
Be even braver.
Yeah.
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 I mean, there are certain things that, may be scary when you're young. And when you look back at those and you're in 40, then it, you're a bit older, you say, why didn't you take that opportunity? If your gut, you think about the opportunity and pros and cons, just accept a bit more risk.
Yeah.
So to any young people, be brave, push yourself out of your comfort zone. It may not be easy at the beginning, but then it opens up so many doors.
Indeed, indeed. And look, at 40, I'm 40 myself next week, Chiara, so I don't want to come out of that young bracket just yet. I still feel young enough.
Yeah, me too, but I need to face
But
reality.
look, my next question is, look, if there's a particular book or resource or podcast or something like that that you would recommend for our audience, or just in general, really, is there something that you've read that has made a difference in your life or an impact on your life?
Okay, well, podcasts and webinars, there are plenty of opportunities. Just browse, be curious, find what it depends on what people are really interested in. I would really recommend, I'm really a fan of Simon Sinek. So I would recommend Find Your Why, for instance, identify your why, find your why. If you are a newbie, if you are a bit more, advanced in your careers, I would recommend as well Patrick Lencioni and the Five Dysfunctions of a Team. There is a kind of another book that I read that is a bit borderline in terms, at times you feel and reflect and say, has he really wrote that? Is it really true? It's based a lot on history and it is the 48 Rules of Power by,
Someone
I'll give you
else
the
has
name.
mentioned that one before on the podcast.
Yeah, it's really a
Paul
big book.
Simms. Yeah.
Big book that you read. There is a lot of history in there, but there are good tips. Take it or leave it. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you need to take everything as written in stone,
Yeah.
but it helps reflection. So I would recommend this.
I've not, yeah, that's one that I've not read or listened to. I mean, it looks like it is quite a big one, so I'll probably audiobook for that one. But yeah, need to take a look at that. And I guess lastly then, we've spoken a lot about work, but you also did mention kind of that mini expat community feel that you had when you first come over to the UK playing football and things like this. Look, we're all human, so what is it, what else aside from work do you do to relax, enjoy downtime doing?
Good. I'm doing a lot of things. So I do a lot of sports with the limitation that now I have a daughter and the time I'm free to do that is a bit limited. But whenever I can, I do sports, whether running outside, whether workout, really sweaty things that makes all my endorphins running. I do travel a lot. I mean, at least now that we're out of COVID, I suffered a lot during COVID where we couldn't really go anywhere. But again, curiosity coming out. I need to learn new things, new places, new. So traveling is up on my list. I do have a few travels lined up for the next months, by the way. And then really, I'm watching a lot of historical series on Netflix. So it helps learning even different cultures. I'm currently watching a series who is all in Mexico. And about all the they have quite a particular different reality than what we have here in terms of background criminality and stuff. So I think it's really interesting and it is an opportunity to learn as well. As well as it is in Spanish. So I'm not really fluent in that language and it is an opportunity to learn. So you see, I'm combining
There's some
always several things.
multitasking, yeah. Netflix and learning, I like it. Well, Kiara, pleasure having you on. I know one thing that we've not necessarily touched upon is your recent and how I came across you was work in terms of networking and being active on LinkedIn. So look, I'm sure that I'll promote this on my LinkedIn profile, and I'm sure people will perhaps
Certainly.
reach out to you there. But in terms of, reaching out to you, getting hold of you, learning more about yourself, what you do, etc. You've been very active networking and assisting me of late. Is LinkedIn the best place to connect and, liaise with yourself, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can use LinkedIn or I can give you my email so we can stay in touch with whichever means. I mean, I'm in front of a computer anyway, so I either check LinkedIn or email. So or my watch is vibrating, so because I receive notifications. So either way, it's fine. Yeah, I didn't mention at all during this podcast about the importance of LinkedIn and network, and I realized that. But I do really feel that it's becoming more and more crucial. The last time I was looking for a job, it was 10 years ago, and it was a completely different way of searching. And I think that you really need to put an effort in talking with people, networking, building a strong resume, working with a coach if you can, if your finances allow, because that's another thing, right? So it's really where the job market is going, the change at least. So I would
100%. I
recommend
think
that.
certainly at the moment, there's just so much competition. So it's you just have to be doing more than,
More.
I guess, ever before. But look, Cara, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And yeah, thanks for being so easy to chat with and so open about, I guess, your career journey, what you've been doing, and I guess kind of actually sharing how you've been doing it and kind of the challenges involved. So absolute pleasure having you on. Enjoy.
Likewise.